listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM, CITR.
Wow. Well, we are starting off really nice and hot with Sexy in Van City Radio 101.9 FM. I'm Caroline McGillivray, and I'm excited to talk about reputations. So I thought Joan Jett would be absolutely perfect to start the hour off with a little bit of bad reputation. Because bad reputations are things that happen sometimes if you're not careful exactly what you do. We spend all this time working really, really, really hard in our lives. Hard, I like that word, hard. To make sure that we have good reputations. We work hard, we do our volunteer work, we're nice to people, we're sweet, and then all of a sudden we go crazy and we do wild things. And sometimes that doesn't make us do well in the real world. So tonight I've got someone who is a den mother to sororities and is a wonderful, wonderful lady who I'm very excited to have on the show. She has lots of advice to give us, and she's kind of the modern day version and a heck of a lot sexier than Mrs. Garrett from The Facts of Life. I am looking forward to having JD on the show. Welcome, JD. Thank you for being on the show.
It's a pleasure to be here. I hope the listeners know who Mrs. Garrett is or who The Facts of Life are, because that's a pretty old show.
It's a very old show. I think I'm showing my age. I think we revel in our age, and we revel in our age, or whatever that word is, and just really enjoy every drop, every ounce of our age, because it's wonderful.
And hopefully we don't wreck our reputation along the way.
Exactly. Tonight's show is all about sex, drugs, and rock and roll. So we thought Joan Jett was exactly right to start it off. But even, I know a lot of times, one of the reasons why, JD, I'm glad you're on the show tonight, is I know you educate people about this right when they start university. But sometimes those lessons are lessons that all of us need a little bit of a revisit to the 101 on how to keep a good reputation, how to manage yourself amongst the sex, drugs, and rock and roll in this world, whether or not it's at your office Christmas party, whether or not it's at a 5 to 9 cocktail hour event after work, whatever, all these networking opportunities.
For sure. It's funny to think about it in such ways, because I teach and educate and mentor 19 and 20-year-olds fresh out of university, fresh out of high school, just entering university. And a lot of them don't have those common sense markers, but then again, I'll go out with my girlfriends in my ripe young age. And it'll be quite shocking to have them revert back to their pre-20 self. So one of the basic rules, and I'm sure we've all learned it, and I think that a reminder should go out to all of you out there, is to go with buddies. Whether you're male or female, man or woman, boy, girl, or whatever's in between, you need a buddy when you go drinking, and you need a couple of them, because dollars to donuts, if it's just the two of you, you're both going to get trashed, and that's never fun.
Well, I think it depends on the relationship, but yes, the buddy system is very important. You should have learned that when you took your swimming lessons and you were flirting with the lifeguard when you were a kid.
One would hope that you would have got that one at kindergarten, but, you know, we do silly things. We become adults. We think that we know better, that we're more responsible, that we can go out and have a couple and nothing bad's going to happen. But surprisingly enough, in this day and age, a lot of stuff does happen to us, and we need to be prepared.
We definitely do, and with friends, it's important, whether or not they're cock-blocking when they see somebody who is a type of a predator who might be creeping and inching his way around, or her.
Yes.
Could go either way.
Our out there. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm almost at that age. You realize that?
Oh, don't even.
Don't brag about it.
Don't even. Actually, you know what? After watching, there's this reality TV show with the cougar and the 20-year-olds. Oh my goodness! Some of those men. Oh. You haven't seen it.
I haven't. Maybe this is why I don't watch television.
Yeah, maybe we should. Moving on.
moving on. But with that, it's really important whether or not it's your friend who happens to have an extra credit card, which on that note, when you are going out with your friends, if you are a woman, make sure A, you've got your credit card, B, you've got your lip gloss, C, you've got an extra $20 in case you do need to skip out of there and you've been drinking, don't drink and drive, and you need to take a taxi so you've got that money to get yourself home. And you've got your business cards, which hopefully should be good. Hopefully you're not having a really bad night. If that's the case, make sure you forget them at home and use a completely different name so you can forget. JD, you're right at the very top of the hour you're mentioning in terms of sometimes when we go out with our friends, we revert back to our college selves where sometimes we do need to be reminded because there's certain friendships where you just kind of revert back into those roles that we are. So if you're going to a 9-to-5 thing and you want to be respected and especially if it's an industry event, you got to be super duper careful. So with that, the other things too, of course, is just making sure that your friend can cut you off where it's like, hey, okay, can I please have her credit card back from the bar? That kind of thing. Just being really good that way. Mm-hmm. So there's other things. Other things that are really important is date rape. Being really careful, not just that your friend's just crazy and she's going to go home with the wrong person, but which... it could be that too, but also that they're doing it because it's a consensual thing. Mm-hmm. It's really, really important. I know we've talked a lot about date rape. There's been shows about it in terms of in the movies, etc. But I think we need a little bit of a refresher. A girlfriend of mine, Emmy Rogers, actually had something not so great happen to her not that long ago where she actually blacked out and was sick for days. So it still happens modern day. So let's start with why date rape drugs? Like, what are they? Like,
most of them are a form of sedative or tranquilizer.
Okay.
They tend to suppress your central nervous system so that you become sleepy or tired.
Nauseous?
Sometimes there's nausea. It depends on how you're feeling at the time. You become dizzy, disorientated. In some extremes, you lose muscle control and can't function properly. And because these drugs are a central nervous suppressant, if you take too much of them, if for whatever reason there's mm-hmm. a lot in your drink or somebody was being overzealous, I hate to use that word, but you know how it is.
I do.
It can depress your breathing to such an extent that you could go into respiratory distress. You could stop breathing and you could go into a coma, or you can, heaven forbid, die from it. So these are very scary drugs. I don't want to scare everybody out. They're not, you know, but you should be aware of sort of what you're looking for if your girlfriend starts tripping all over herself and not responding, because that's going to be the first sign. Is she'll be slurred, but it won't be a drunken slur. It'll be a more sleepy slurred or a non-functioning slurred. And it's hard when you're drinking, because I think...
well, your judgment's impaired a lot of the times to start with. And I'm trying to visualize what a non-functional slur sounds like, because obviously you've never gone drinking with some of my friends.
clearly not.
According to Brown University, they're saying 55% of females, 75% of males who are involved in acquaintance rape have usually been drinking or using drugs when the incident actually occurs. So it's interesting, whether it be alcohol, which can be a factor sometimes. Sometimes it just gives us that permission to do things that we really want to do. Other times it really impairs our judgment, not just from when we're drinking and driving, but also in our love lives. So we need to be really careful and take precautions and be safe. But back to date rape drugs, or as I digress there for a moment, there's a couple different ones. We've got GHB, of course, which mm-hmm. I'm going to let you talk about these a little bit because...
yeah, that's fine. GHB, or gamma hydroxybutylate, is a sedative. There's ketamine, which is actually a horse tranquilizer.
I know. I thought it was a cat tranquilizer for the longest time.
Yeah.
We were just talking about that in the green room while we were prepping the show.
Yeah, for sure. It is It is used most often as an anesthetic in surgeries, but if you think about it in terms of horse tranquilizer, mm-hmm. a horse can weigh up to, 1,000 pounds.
That's true.
So we want to keep that into perspective. And then another one is Rohypnol or roofies.
What are these, though? What do they feel like? And they're colorless, aren't they? And you can't mm-hmm. taste them.
Yeah. They're colorless. They have no taste. They leave no sediment on the bottom of your glass. So you can look at your glass and there's nothing there. It could have been dropped in or even plopped in as a pill form and there's okay. nothing there. With Rohypnol, you get really tired.
Okay.
Rohypnol is one of those really sleepy ones. Ketamine is a liquid. It's an injectable, so you'll never see that. You won't even taste that in your drink. And the same goes for GHB.
Wow.
So you remember way back when you used to put your hands over your glass?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, very good technique to prevent this from happening to you because...
Wow.
You never know what's going in there.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really true. In terms of with the drugs and things like that, what would be a way that perhaps people could just be aware of, just some tips in terms of making sure that it doesn't happen to them?
Well, always watch your drink. It's one of those really simple rules. Watch your drink.
Don't even put it down. If your drink's out of sight, even for a couple minutes, don't even bother finishing it. Get yourself a new one.
Yeah. Be very, very cautious accepting a drink from somebody else. Often I'll be sitting at the bar chatting with my girlfriends and a beautiful young man will come by and hand me a bottle of beer, a Corona with a lime in the neck or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's truly flattering, but at the same time, you don't know where it's been and you don't know who's been touching it. So treat that with discretion. I don't tend to drink drinks that are bought for me. If a gentleman wants to buy me a drink, I'll say I'll accompany you to the bar and I'll pick my own drink. And that way I can ensure that I'm not being taken advantage of.
So guys, you're listening, you can still practice chivalry by mm-hmm. escorting the lady to the bar and ordering her drink of her choice there, even though it can be very debonair and suave as well if you want to send a drink to her table, but it's quite lovely that way.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's her choice.
And then you're scoring points because, she gets to have one-on-one time with you and you're not completely anonymous. Nothing more is more intimidating sometimes in a bar as anonymity because then you're looking around and going, who the hell is that? Don't be a chicken shit, guys. Don't do it.
Don't do what? Don't put date rape drugs or don't buy drinks for girls?
Both. No.
I like my drinks bought for me sometimes.
No, I never pay for a drink at the bar, but that's neither here nor there. I also accompany my men up to the bar to let them buy me my drink. So girls, keep that in mind. Make them work for it.
And guys, you should keep that in mind too, because in that way you get a conversation out of it, so you're just not spending money unwisely.
Brilliant. Absolutely.
Especially brilliant. In this recession. It's very important to watch your pennies, but doing it in a really sexy way.
Mm-hmm.
It can be quite lovely. If someone has dealt with a date rape drug, what's something that they can do? Like, should we take them to the hospital right away, or...
If you are out in the town and you suspect that one of your girls or one of your guys, because yes, guys, I know this sounds completely impossible.
Or a stranger in the bathroom.
Yeah. Men are just as susceptible as being roofied as girls are. So take them to the hospital immediately. You don't know what it is. You don't know how it was administered. So take them to the hospital, let them know as much information as possible. You're probably going to have to fill out some sort of report, so you need to know what bar you were at, who you talked to, and just keep those little details in your brain. I know that you'll be drinking and some of those details will be a little bit fuzzy, but try to keep an eye on that detail because it'll be really important to prevent this from happening to somebody else. And girls, if you're going out with your guy friends, and this is really important, we tend to think that we're much safer with our guy friends when we go out, that you won't become a victim. I do know of a story in Vancouver of a girl and a guy going out drinking, and they were both date rape drugs both made it into their drinks. And both of them disappeared to some unknown location. The girl was raped, and the boy was locked in a room, and they were dumped in the University Endowment Lands. And
this was right at UBC then?
Yeah. And so it was very scary for both of them because neither one of them knew what was going on. Neither one of them remembered.
Wow.
And it was very scary for the community because it hit so close to home. So don't think that you're safe. Be very, very careful about your drinks.
Be very, very careful just in general.
Mm-hmm.
It's really important. The other thing, too, as JD was saying, is it's really important to go to the hospital. Although traces of the drug may still appear in your system for up to 72 hours after ingestion, depending on the dosage and, of course, obviously your individual metabolism, the chance of getting proof are usually best when the sample is obtained quickly.
Yeah.
So it's really, really important to get that quite quickly.
They also can reverse the effects of the drug a lot more effectively the sooner that they see you. There are a couple of other drugs that can counteract central nervous system depressants, and so don't sleep through it. It's not worth it. It could be very dangerous. Just go to the hospital.
I think that's really, really important.
Mm-hmm.
Other things that are really important as well is if you do decide to go home with somebody, not because, let's just get this into a little bit of a happier thing. So we've got the drugs. We've talked about reputation. Really think about it before you go home with somebody, especially if it's at a bar and it's casual. Just especially if it's a work function with Facebook and, you know, there's Twitter pics now, Twit pics. People can take pictures on their iPhone or their BlackBerry and it's up there immediately. So if you're puking in the bathroom and your coworker thinks, ah, that's so cute, let's take a picture of that. Or you're having sex, you're shagging your boss on top of the photocopy machine because you've snuck back to the office. Just be careful with all those things. It can really affect all those hours that you put into building your reputation. In a proper, smart way. Not that you can't have fun, but just make sure you're not completely inebriated so you're not able to really think about the consequences and where you're going to be tomorrow.
Exactly. You don't want to be regretting it and having what is affectionately known as the walk of shame happen on the internet.
Yes, and especially if it's on YouTube or something like that, that could be quite horrific. Although if you do choose and it's something you've been wanting to do for a while and you've thought about going home with somebody, make sure you have condoms. I forgot to put that in our purse this evening when we plan to go out. So,
Yes, condoms are very, very important. Very important.
They are. And last week's show, we talked a little bit about dental dams. If you are getting together with someone and it's like, I'm not going to have sex. And interestingly, a lot of high school students do believe that they save their reputation if they don't actually have intercourse. If they just indulge in oral sex, it's safe. Well, with oral sex, you still need to use dental dams and condoms. It's just a lot safer if you can't buy a dental dam. I don't know about you, but I've never seen one at the drugstore before.
No, they sell them at Women's Wear on Commercial Drive. You can buy them in their pick and mix bunch. So you get a brown paper bag, it's $10, and you fill it with 10 little goodies that you want from their pick and mix section. And one of them is dental dams, and they have various thicknesses and tastes because, of course, dental dams are what you use to do your teeth when you go into a dentist. So you can get flavored dental dams and you get micro thins. For sure. So there are places to access that kind of stuff, but if not, I've heard of Saran wrap and whatever else.
You can also slice open a condom actually as
yes.
well. And you just need to make sure you hold it in place. One of the things I am going to touch on, just in case you are going home with a female, say hypothetically, with that and you decide to scissor, you can actually get straps that actually can hold the dental dam into place. I was curious about that, so I asked Julia Saunders, who used to be my co-host when I did Juicebox Radio, and that was her recommendation on that one, which, again, I believe at Women's Wear and certain reputable stores that you can pick those up. So, because I was curious about that, because I was trying to imagine doing something like that and holding it in place. And I think that would kind of ruin the moment, you know?
For sure. But you—it's not your responsibility as the receiver. It's more a giver's responsibility on that side, holding it in place.
I think it's it doesn't hurt to be responsible regardless.
Oh, most definitely. I'm not saying don't bring your dams with you, girls. Bring them.
Which, on that note, as we're talking about all the sexy stuff, we are going to take a short break. And when we come back, we are going to talk a little bit about some of the ugly stuff. We're going to talk about sex a little bit more, fun sex, good sex, and some STIs as well, and what to look out for. And as well as that, how to have conversations in case you're worried about your partner having STIs. You're listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM CITR. We will be right back.
Your 75-cent coffee fix in the sub. It's your source for reasonably priced, creatively named stew and vegan brownies.
It's your purveyor of bicycle-delivered local produce.
It's also a place where volunteers can realize their vision of responsible business and where like-minded students can explore UBC's food systems.
Hark! Sprouts is currently accepting applications for next year's executive board and is encouraging ambitious, creative, and disciplined students from all faculties and year levels to apply.
Come by Sprouts in the sub-basement to learn more about our projects and how to get involved.
I tried to kick the ball, but my tinny flew right up. I'm red as a bee, 'cause I'm so embarrassed.
Sex Galaxy and Van City Radio may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM, CITR.
And we are back with sexy, a lot more sexy, and some not-so-sexy stuff for the second half of the show on 101.9 FM, CITR. If you're just joining us now, of course, it's Ms. McGillivray, and I've got JD on with me today. And we are chatting right before the break. We're getting a little bit hot, talking about all sorts of birth control methods in terms of safe sex, which were dental dams and things like that. So this half of the show, we're going to be talking about all those STIs, which, in case you don't know what an STI is, it's a sexually transmitted infection. They don't call it sexually transmitted disease anymore.
It's the PR police. Can't help it.
Well, it's very important. So with that, what would you say the top STIs are to just be careful with?
Oh, my goodness. Where do you start? Things that you should be careful about are obviously HIV and AIDS. We have talked about it to death. So,
actually, you know what? I think it's really important to talk about it because a couple of weeks ago we had Christopher Bolton on our show. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about becoming drag. And one of the things we discussed was the fact that in the 80s, HIV and AIDS was a huge scare. And with that, people were trying to be as careful as they could because people were dying. And today, with a lot of the drug cocktails, people are able to live a lot longer, and they're able to continue to live. And because of that, a lot of the younger generations who have not seen people dying are not practicing safe sex anymore. So I think it's really important in terms of HIV and AIDS.
Well,
what are some of the symptoms in terms of HIV and AIDS?
HIV and AIDS, well, obviously, we should start at the very beginning. HIV is the virus that infects the body. When your immune system becomes so inundated that it can no longer fight off common infections, you are said to have progressed into what is known as AIDS. There are some technical prerequisites for this, but for the most part, that's how you marker it. When you first get infected with HIV or the human immunovirus, human immunodeficiency virus, terribly sorry about that.
That's okay.
You'll feel flu-like symptoms. You'll have a sore throat. You'll run a slight fever. You'll feel tired and have general aches and pains. It's very much like a slight flu.
So more like a swine flu that everybody's terrified of right now?
Oh, don't get me started on the swine flu. the symptoms dissipate within a couple of weeks, and then and there's nothing. And you don't sort of feel the effects of the infection until your immune system has become severely compromised. In that case, what happens is common infections or the flu or yeast infections even become a lot harder for your body to fend off. And so you'll start getting sick. And one of the things is, if you go to the doctor and say to them, you know, I've been sick for a while and it's just repetitive, a lot of the things that they will test for is HIV to see if that has made it into your blood system. Because it has no effect other than the fact that it cannot, it inhibits your immune system from doing its proper job.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. And in Vancouver, especially with needle use, sometimes I know that's quite high here. Mm-hmm. Obviously, in different parts of the world, it's very high as well. Mm-hmm. And it's one that can be just making sure you protect yourself, plain and simple, using condoms, just making sure you're careful with your fluids and when it's body exchange fluids.
Yeah.
So all of you who are into scat and water sports and all that, just really being careful.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really, really being careful.
Especially with,
I was going to say, even if it's your first time and you're having sex and you're virgin, in terms of if you do bleed, again, you've got to be really, really careful.
Definitely.
I actually heard a young lady actually tell me the other day that she didn't think that you could get pregnant or you could get HIV if it was your first time.
If it's your first time and his first time, the odds are slim, but there's no, for contracting HIV.
Yeah.
Pregnancy, you can get pregnant at any time.
They
girls.
Swim.
They swim. Your body is always ripe and ready, so you have to take good care of that. As well, I know we were talking earlier about protecting our reputations by not actually having intercourse, mm-hmm. but participating in a lot of oral sex. You can still get HIV from oral sex.
It's just the risk is a little bit lower, is it not?
The risk is lower. You won't actually get it as easily through just fluid exchange. However, any kind of cut or laceration on the inside of your mouth, say you were eating a hamburger and
I have a canker sore.
Yeah, canker sore, or chewed
cold
the
sore.
Inside of your mouth for some reason, anything. Anything in your mouth that exposes or cuts the barrier of that mucous membrane compromises your body's ability to fight off that virus. So this is one of the big reasons why, girls, you got to learn how to give a blowjob wearing a condom. get the nice flavored kind. They're amazing. And really take care of yourself. Boys, too.
And if you are giving a blowjob with a condom on, make sure that you put a little bit of lube inside it.
Yes.
So you don't end up totally shredding the poor guy to death.
Mm-hmm, most definitely.
It's very, very important. So lube, lube, and lube. And make sure you educate yourself at the store so you find out which ones have a little bit of flavor on them,
mm-hmm.
which should be on the exterior of the condom. And with the sugar granules, just so it doesn't grit and grind inside.
Mm-hmm.
So making sure it's a little bit of a silkier, smoother lube. So you can find all that out if you go somewhere like Art of Loving or to Women's Wear or somewhere like that. So education. And toys can be really fun too.
Mm.
But you just need to make sure, again, keeping them clean.
Mm-hmm.
Use condoms with your toys as well.
Most definitely.
And other STIs out there, one of the ones we don't talk about very much is hepatitis C.
Yes, yes. I was actually going to move right on to hepatitis C. Often this has been a sexually transmitted infection that has been relegated to a small segment of society in terms of IV drug users contracting it from one another through blood contact or through the homosexual community. But it's not limited there. Don't fool yourself. Don't think that you are safe because
you're not a drug addict or you're not in the homosexual community.
Mm-hmm.
If you are engaging in anal play, which there is, I believe it's just, correct me if I'm wrong, one membrane. There's not very many layers of membranes. I believe Sue Johansson actually said it was just one in the anal cavity in comparison to the vaginal cavity. So with that, it tears and you're more at risk of that. So if you were playing, and again, for those of you who believe that if you are not practicing vaginal intercourse, that you are still a virgin and you're engaging in anal play, which there are some youth that do that. A few years ago, I believe there was a study where there were more kids between the ages of 10 to 12 actually engaging in anal play and still believing that they were virgins, which was actually quite scary because the bodies aren't fully formed at that age, and
mm-hmm.
it can actually be very damaging for some of the nerves as well as obviously organs, etc.
Exactly. Hepatitis is also one of those things that if you do use toys, make sure that you sterilize them. I know sometimes toy play and toy cleaners do not have, they're gentle, but you want to get an antibacterial, an antimicrobe, and an antiviral cleaner for you, for your toys, because Hep C can live on a surface for weeks. It's not like HIV that
where it dies the body.
When it leaves the body, Hep C lives on any kind of surface for weeks and weeks. And so what you want to do is you want to make sure that your toys are sterile. So if they're not electric, boil them.
Mm-hmm.
If they do have an electronic component, make sure that you have really good toy cleaners. Because if you're not taking care of them, you risk contracting or spreading that to somebody else.
And just as a side note, make sure when you're boiling your toys that you actually watch over them, because you don't want to burn your house down or your apartment building. And yes, I've actually had a friend do that before.
I understand. I was boiling my cup and I let it boil dry.
It's better than boiling bunnies. A little bit of fatal attraction there.
Most definitely.
There's other STIs out there. One of the biggest ones that I hear about a lot is HPV virus. And there's been a lot of the debates in terms of whether to get the vaccine or not to get the vaccine. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, HPV is the human papillomavirus. Mm-hmm. There are many, many different strains. There's no one human papillomavirus. There are thousands. They are responsible for warts. That's one of the strains. It is also one of the strains that leads to cervical cancer. Now, the HPV the HPV vaccine that they've just come out with, Gardasil, is it targets. I'm not quite sure, and we'll get Ms. McGlivery to look this up. But I think it targets six out of the most virulent forms of HPV and the ones that are most commonly associated with cervical cancer. So it is a good idea in so much that it's a very good protective measure. If you've had a lot of sex or you're over the age of 26, it's a moot point. They won't even recommend you to get the shot because most likely you've already
been exposed to it.
Now, don't be afraid of the HPV virus. A lot of us do get exposed to it over our lifetimes. I was exposed to it 2 years ago, and I had to have a colposcopy done and had to go into the women's clinic. And it isn't that scary. It doesn't always lead to cervical cancer. However, the greater risks that you take, the more likely you are going to cause cell mutations that could lead to cervical cancer. So it's something that you don't want to muck about around. And condoms and dental dams are a very, very good way of preventing that to be transmitted to your system.
Just out of curiosity, in terms of the HPV virus, if a man contracts it, is it possible? Does that make them more at risk for developing, say, prostate cancer?
I don't know if they've done any correlative studies on that.
Okay, I'll have to make another show about that.
Most definitely.
And find out.
However, he can carry the HPV virus and pass it on to another girl that he's sleeping with or his next partner. It's something that you have to be very aware of.
I think carrier viruses are very important to talk about as well, because HPV is one of those. Herpes is another one as well, in terms of where sometimes somebody may have it, and we'll get into what the actual symptoms are in terms of herpes, but I believe the stats for that are one out of every five people in North America have herpes, and with that, it's one of those ones that there are many people who are carriers, but they don't have any symptoms at all, even though the people who do have symptoms usually have quite severe symptoms many times.
Most definitely. Actually, I would even say, and again, we'll have to research this, but 20% is a very conservative estimate for herpes. I know that in Australia, their health board estimates that 80% of the population in Australia
80%
has either herpes simplex or herpes complex, so herpes type A or herpes type B. Regardless of whether you have herpes A or herpes B, you can get it either on your lips or on your genitals. This is one of the big myths that people don't understand, is that if you have cold sores on your lips, most definitely you can give it to somebody on their genitals.
Definitely.
The difference between the two herpes is one is a much more severe and virulent strain. Herpes simplex, you tend to get it once in a while, maybe once or twice a year. It manifests as like a sore on your lip or a sore on your labia or your penis. Usually the tip of the penis for men or underneath the head. In where, depending on whether you have foreskin or not, just tucked in right behind the head, it can be found there as well. And it's not particularly painful, but it is noticeable. It becomes a weeping sore, and that you'll notice if you're having sex that it'll be there. Herpes complex is a lot more long, a lot more painful, and you get a lot more frequently. There are drugs that help you minimize the amount of attacks that you get throughout the year. They also help you suppress the attacks when you get them. They're antiviral drugs, Vesiclavir or Voltrex, if you want the brand names. But it is something that people don't realize. And also another thing that I think that people should be aware of is even if you don't have a cold sore, you could be producing the virus and you could be transmitting the virus. So you need to be very, very careful. If you're even remotely close to getting and developing one, and anybody who's had a cold sore knows that you can feel it before it actually develops, you are producing that virus and have the potential of passing it on.
Which that would be described as the shedding period, is it not?
The shedding period, the weeping period, when it's actually come to the surface, you'll see it. It looks, it bubbles up, or sometimes it's completely smooth, but it looks like little bubbles of clear fluid. And those bubbles are actually filled with a water that actually... A fluid, a body fluid.
It's almost like a blister, isn't it?
Yeah, that carries the virus.
There are other ones as well that just don't have as many symptoms. Things like chlamydia, for example. That's one that can be passed on because it's really hard to track, which if it's not caught, that's pelvic inflammatory disease later on. It can develop into things like that.
It can cause sterility. It can cause... it can... move up your central nervous system and into your brain, and actually if oh no, that's syphilis.
Okay,
that's
you scared syphilis. Me then. I was just going to say, I didn't realize chlamydia was that severe.
Sorry, I'm looking at the wrong part of my notes here, ladies and gentlemen. No, chlamydia, you're right. It's easily transmittable, and in fact, Vancouver had a public health warning about syphilis about 2 years ago.
That's right. The street nurses in the downtown east side were actually interviewing a lot of the survival sex workers in regards to symptoms. Actually, we had a doctor on about a year ago when I was doing Juicebox Radio, and I found it interesting where he mentioned, because he was working at a clinic that focused on sexually transmitted infections, and he had one client that came in who actually came down with syphilis, and it was actually from carrying somebody naked on the back of his neck, actually, where he developed the sores there.
Nice.
Which is interesting because you don't, sometimes we think of sexually transmitted infections as where you have to have sex to have them, or they're on our genitalia, or they're on our mouths, but it doesn't necessarily have to be that. But I'll let you go on a little bit more in terms of syphilis.
Syphilis, like I said, it enters your bloodstream and can affect your brain. A lot of famous crazy people in history, physicians, hypothesize that they contracted syphilis because you can track their cognitive thinking throughout the decisions that they've made in life, and there's a definite exponential curve when they go crazy. There's also gonorrhea, which has... The signs and symptoms of gonorrhea are like a yeast infection gone bad.
Really scary.
Yeah, it's the cottage cheese, but green. It's very, very disturbing. A lot of people exhibit it differently, but usually there's a definite smell change, an increase in sloughing of vaginal...
Sloughing.
Sloughing of vaginal fluids. Sorry.
Oh, like the schmegma?
Your secretions. All you know those... Everyday secretions, they get
when
a lot
when it's cleaning
worse.
Itself. Yeah. Okay.
All right. So those are all our STDs. Am I missing any?
STIs, yeah.
STIs. Oh,
I think
so
those are the those are the main ones. Pelvic inflammatory disease. I know we touched on
PID,
a little bit, but we should probably just touch on that as well. Is there any symptoms if a guy has it?
For a man, I would not know, actually. Mostly I deal with women, so that's a good question. I know with women, it is a tenderness in their pelvic area. It comes up almost up to your belly button. It is painful to touch on the outside. You often feel like you have really, really severe cramping. Mm-hmm. Intercourse is very, very, very painful. There's fever.
It's one of those ones you can actually check yourself if you actually just gently poke around your belly button, very gently, just gently pressing. Years ago, for the UBC Medical Department, they used to actually hire actors to come out, and we'd actually get to pretend the standardized patient program, where we get to pretend to have these different ailments. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting because for pelvic inflammatory disease as well as inflammatory bowel syndrome, it was actually interesting how they'd actually poke around, very similar. I remember that because after having 50 students doing that for their exams, I was bruised. It was very painful, but it's really important. So say you are with someone, you've gone home with them, and you're about to go downstairs and visit that area. So perhaps, would you say for the first time you have sex with somebody, it may not be a bad idea to keep the lights on?
Most definitely. You want to see what you're getting into, most definitely. Especially if you don't know their history. You don't want to expose yourself to that sort of thing when you don't know somebody's history. So definitely sex with the lights on. It also makes it a somewhat erotic experience.
I think so too. We should stop hiding. And that's a really good way, actually going full circle in terms of having a good reputation in the sack, is by just displaying sexual confidence.
Most definitely.
Is a great way. And sometimes having sex with the lights on is a really good way to display that. Mm-hmm. And really take your time with things. And what are some things that you should be looking for in terms of if you are about to go downstairs in someone? And I can't believe I'm using downstairs as if I'm in high school. But if you're about to indulge, what are some things that to look for and perhaps be aware of? And you should be using condoms and dental dams anyway, but mm-hmm. even still, as you're doing a cursory look and just looking at your partner and just seeing how beautiful they are, mm-hmm. and just checking everything out, it's really important just to look for things to protect yourself and as well for them.
Most definitely.
What are some key things that might be important if you spot them that you might want to just hesitate and maybe not have sex with them that night?
Most definitely. Now, by no stretch of the imagination are we asking or suggesting that you go through a medical exam when you're going down on your partner.
Unless you like playing doctor.
Ooh.
Or nurse.
Or nurse.
Naughty nurse.
Naughty, naughty nurse. One of the things that you should look for is any sores, any bumps, any sores, any cuts or abrasions, anything that does not look like smooth, clean skin. Men will often say, well, it's a vagina. Have you seen one?
Is it a vulva or is it a vagina? They can have to open up unless they've got like a speculum or something and just open it up with those little duck lips, which personally, I don't know, if I was playing doctor, wouldn't be my first choice of what I'd really like shoved up inside me. Thank you very much.
No, thank you. But any sort of texture on the lips, because there is slight texturing on any woman's lips, what you're looking for in that area is a redness, as opposed to just any sort of lumps and bumps or anything like that. Because as we all know, we have hair down there, and a bump could be a blocked pore, an oil-blocked pore. So not only are you looking for bumps and sores, and you're looking for redness, weeping, or secreting any sort of kind of fluid, like a scratch.
And not just getting wet.
Yeah, not those kind of secretions. They're all good. Smell is a very, very big one, and I know that...
we've talked about that a little bit, but it's very important.
I know that if I'm going down on somebody, I don't want them to smell. But smell is very important because it will signify if there's anything wrong. If he or she smells a little bit off or
a little funky,
it doesn't even have to be really offensive. But if it doesn't smell the way you want it to or the way that it should smell, then don't do it. Of course, everybody does have different smells.
I was just going to say, sometimes your pheromones just may not match up.
Exactly. Which is a good reason why you shouldn't be having sex again. It would be mediocre. I mean, really. But yeah.
It just means biologically your genes may not make mesh together well. So you may not have a great child together.
Yes.
And on that note, ladies, if you're on the pill, your sense of smell is different. And you may find somebody very attractive who you may not actually be attracted to. Mm-hmm. Because when you're in taking hormones, whether it be the pill, whether it be the ring, just different birth control methods, that way it can change your sense of smell.
Most definitely. It also changes the way you smell as well. And so
someone may find you attractive and they're not really attracted to you.
Exactly.
So if you make this a long-term thing, please get off your pills.
And practice safe sex another way.
Exactly. And if you do need to chat with somebody in terms of STIs, where you think they might have something because they are smelling a bit funky, don't just go, oh my gosh, you stink. Like that, you know, you want to be protective. You want to take care of yourself, but you also want to take care of your partner as well. And you don't want to damage their sense of self-esteem either.
Most definitely. If this is a one-night stand,
that's when you say, I'm not that kind of girl.
Yeah.
It'd be bad for my reputation and leave.
Yeah. Duck and cover. Suggest they might go to the doctor if you want to be responsible for the next girl who comes along. Or boy. But by any stretch of the imagination, talk to your partner face to face. One of these conversations is not one you should be doing over text message,
or
Facebook,
Twitter,
email, voicemail, none of it. It's not cool. You want to talk to them, you want to sit down and say, hey, this is something that I think we should do. My favorite approach, actually, is to set an STD anniversary or STI.
STI anniversary.
STI anniversary. When I start a new relationship or I've been in a relationship for a long period of time, I'll often, before I have sex with somebody, say we'll make a date, we'll go out, dinner, movies, romance, the whole nine yards, and I expect you to bring your test results. And it becomes a great setup because you know that if your test results are clear, you're going to be having the most incredible sex imaginable because, of course, you've waited this long, or you know that you're clean and say you're on birth control. Maybe you can have unprotected sex. Who knows?
You want to make sure you've been with someone for quite a while for that.
For a long time for that.
And for some STIs, such as herpes, it's really difficult to diagnose as well unless it's actual blood work.
Yes. Well, and that's the thing is that if you get a full screening, a full blood screening,
they don't test for it.
You can ask them. Yeah, that's, yes. Ms. McGlivery just pointed out something very important. You do get blood work done on hepatitis and HIV and gonorrhea, but you do not get blood work done on herpes. You have to specially request it. So if you're going in, talk to your doctor about that as well. And
HPV as well, that's a difficult one for them to test because there's so many different types of strands as well, mm-hmm. is it not?
Well, they can't test that one with a blood test. What that happens is on your annual pap smear, mm-hmm. one of the tests that they do in one of their swabs that they take is for HPV. And what it does is it does not look necessarily for the virus, but what it looks for is slight mutations. And then if there's been like a slight mutation in the cells, if anything's even remotely irregular, if it's not 100% pristine, perfect, you'll go in and you go into the women's health center and you'll get a colposcopy done, and that's when they can screen and start looking at what kind of HPV viruses you may or may not have, how bad the dysplasia is, et cetera, so on and so forth. Dysplasia just meaning like irregular cells.
Well, thank you.
No worries.
Well, it's been a pleasure having you on the show, JD.
It's a pleasure to be here. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you. Well, you listeners out there, even if you are being bad, make sure you're very good to yourself and have lots of sexual confidence by taking care of your sexual health and have a good time doing it. So as we sign off, up next is Hans von Kloss's Misery Hour. He's a very, very, very hot, sexy man to be miserable with as he walks in and he raises his eyebrows, all gloriously tanned and hot. And I just want to mention that the song that we had at the break was Lords of Acids, I Sit on Acid. And we will be back next week at the sexy hour of 10 o'clock.
Well, my father says you're nifty,
and you've heard of Baudelaire,
and we both agree that human rights abuses are unfair. You understand your feelings,
and you're not afraid to share,
and I think I could do something with your hair. You smell nice,
and you're groovy,
and we both like foreign movies. My mother says you have that touch of class.
Well, I can see a shining future
where we'll dialogue and nurture.
But there's one last thing I feel I need to ask. Do you take it in the ass? Do you take it in the ass? 'Cause you're beautiful and curvy, but unless you're kind of pervy, there's no way you and me are gonna last. Do you take it in the ass? Do you take it in the ass?